This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre. Straight Fire for Thursday, August 26th. Had to think about the date there for a sec. Yeah, your boy might have had a late night out at the MLS Liga MX All-Star Game. It was a hell of a game. A lot of fun. I know we do have some soccer fans here on the pod. I know we do have some listeners who hit me up on the Instagram DMs. Oh, you follow Mexican soccer? Oh, yeah. I was with the Necaxa ownership group. Actually, a couple NBA, former NBA players in there. Chopping it up with Sean Marion, a.k.a. The Matrix, and Rip Hamilton. By the way, tried to invite Rip Hamilton to my dad pick up basketball game. He's like, perhaps, but that's probably a no. Super nice guys. It was a great game. Listen, it has been a great summer of soccer, and the U.S. is just on a roll, right? They beat Mexico twice, and now they win the All-Star game in PKs. A lot of fun. Bank of California Stadium was popping. Really good time, except for finding an Uber to get home. That took forever. At any rate, we got a really crazy good podcast today. Listen, I don't know about you guys. I always like to, as one person told me way back in the day, you always want to play above the rim. Some people like to say outkick your coverage. You want to always do better and try better and read something tougher and watch something smarter and learn something newer to better yourself. And I think today's guest, Preston Johnson, a.k.a. the Sports Cheetah, is going to really hit you with some smart stuff. And listen, I don't know how many of you are in the NFT crypto space. And some of that, you're probably just like, I'll fast forward through that. I just want to pause and just let you guys know. There is some college football and there's some gambling actionable stuff in there, futures. I just want to say this. There's an opportunity here. And I'm not advising you as like, you know, hey, go drop 20K and do this. We're still, and we talk about this on the pod, we're in like year 25 of the internet, okay? Just think what it was like year 25 for like Ford Motor Company and a lot of these stocks that have gone up 70 million fold, okay? Year 25 of the internet. There's so much growth and opportunity here and stuff is popping and Preston is at the forefront. I actually ask him at the end of the podcast, wait a sec, you're never going to work another day in your life, are you? And he laughs. But once you listen to the pod, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, what am I missing? And I'm not saying you dive in with both feet first, but I think it's time to start researching and getting real with this stuff and understanding what the hell's going on. Like, it is above the head of a lot of people out there, especially if you're in the over 35, over 40. If you're in the 25 and up crowd, like, you're all in on this stuff, you know? At any rate, you guys are going to love the interview. Also, hey, catch me today on Speak for Yourself with Rick Bucher and LeVar Arrington on FS1. Should be fun. Chopping it up as usual. Greg Jennings guest starring. Should be fun. That'll be on FS1, I think, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. So obviously the podcast tomorrow. But today's is phenomenal. And here he is. He's Preston Johnson.
You know a guy. Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guy you will certainly remember from last year. He is kind of a big deal in the gambling space, although he's not gambling in 2021 because he's doing a weight loss thing. Preston Johnson, a.k.a. Sports Cheetah. What's up, dude?
How you doing? It's been a while.
I'm awesome, dude. Yeah, it has been a while. You've fallen off the face of the earth. I mean, you're not doing all your gambling anymore. Remember last year, bubble NBA time. Preston and I would text every day about bets. I mean, this guy's a hardcore gambler, and now he's gone cold turkey because you want to lose 50 pounds. How is the weight loss program going?
That was my goal. So I'm only down like 27. I should be down a lot more because my goal was to lose 50 this year, and I wasn't going to bet on games before I got to 50. I'm still sticking to that. But I lost like 20 in the first 2.5 months, and then I just got pretty lazy. I also had this other project I got really busy with on the side, and like I went like 3 months where I didn't lose anything. And then in the last like 6 weeks, I've dropped like another 7 or 8 pounds. So
I'm just curious for the sports fans out there who love that. Is it more of a weight? Is it a diet? Is it a cardio? What's the key to your success?
It's a little bit of everything. So, since I wasn't really – since man, because, you know, I used to play basketball and love playing pickup pre-COVID. And when I was in Vegas, I would play a few times a week, and that was like my exercise. And then I just really haven't played basketball in a while. So I had to get back into cardio because I hadn't been exercising for, you know, nearly a year and a half. And then diet for sure was part of it. I actually have done a few funky diets. I ate vegan for an entire month, which was great, honestly. I felt really good and alert. And like, it surprised me how much I enjoyed doing that. And then I did like a 72-hour fast where I only drank liquids for like a lemon cayenne drink for 72 hours. So I've done a few things in there to like help kind of push things along, but hopefully by the end of the year I can get to that 50 number.
Wow.
I should be able to do it. I just need to clamp down during football, which will be tough. But
if football's tough, man, I think I told you every Sunday during the football season I order breadsticks and cheese sticks from Papa John's.
Oh, that's right. You told me that. Forgot.
I mean, listen, it's bad, and I'm going to try to get off it. But once you start, because you celebrate opening weekend, like, oh yeah, pizza, tradition. Papa John's. I mean, the Papa John's breadsticks take me back to college. Just the smell of the box, you know, and the cheese sticks. You get them every night at like midnight. It doesn't matter. I got to get off that. But anyways, I want to start with this. Very rare do you find someone who gets to ESPN and then leaves. I mean, not a lot of people have done that. Cowherd, you know, Dan Patrick, there's a handful of humongous guys. Preston Johnson gets on the ESPN gambling show. He's on it with Doug and Joe and all these guys. And then he just leaves. Preston, do you want to, I mean, was this a difficult decision for you or easy or what?
I think it surprised them too, though. I think kind of going to your point is they're accustomed to all of these general media people that once they get to ESPN, that's like the highlight for someone covering sports usually, right? And so once they're there, like they're not just going to leave after their first contract. And so ESPN did offer me another one. And when I said, you know, that it wasn't really in a range that I considered worthwhile for my time at this point, they were surprised. They were taken aback, and they had just laid off like 1,000 employees, right, during COVID. And they're like, well, we're not really giving raises. And my agent, when they went back and forth, they ended up offering me like, ended up being like 45% better than where they started. And I still was like, you know what? I'm just going to do other things. But I think they were surprised. They were not expecting it because, again, like you're kind of saying, people don't just get to ESPN and then leave. The difference with me is I was betting professionally before I ever went to ESPN and they launched the show. And so I was still betting and I still had some other income from that. And I wanted to kind of prioritize my flexibility in doing some of my own side projects in the crypto and NFT space primarily. And so it was honestly an easy decision, even though that it sounds arrogant and stuff. That's just kind of how it went down. And I think it really is kind of just because they're like, we have someone that's pretty good on TV that can talk sports, at least, and betting to an extent that a lot of others can't. And well, I'm sure he'll just do it again. And so part of it, I did move out of Vegas. I moved down here to Southern California to be closer to family. They had built that new studio in Vegas. They probably didn't want to invest a ton in someone that was going to be mostly remote. So I think it kind of goes both ways to some degree, but they definitely were surprised that I didn't just like, yeah, let's do it again. You know, because I think I'm younger too. Most kids would just be like, yeah, let's run it back.
Yeah. So you said gambling professionally. A lot of people might wonder what that officially means. You know, I gamble recreationally. I'm not putting up the big money you are, although we were
in Calcutta. Yeah, you stepped up once.
That was a rude awakening. I mean, like, I don't mind making some big bets, but when you say professional gambler, can you kind of explain that? I don't think the IRS is listening.
I report gambling winnings when I do taxes anyway. So they're used to that. I if the majority of your income is from betting, you know, which mine was for a while, that's, I guess, what I would consider a professional gambler. And it's weird. I'm like the opposite now where I haven't been betting this year and majority of my income's been in other spaces. So I wouldn't even consider myself, you know, theoretically a professional gambler, but I'm still running my models. For example, college football's coming up, NFL's coming up. I still want to be able to like keep that process intact and give out stuff. And I still do my own daily show here at the Betts TV studio that I built up here in Southern California. So I'm still like engaging and doing sports stuff. And I didn't want to like lose it, so to speak, where if I just took like a couple years completely away, it'd be tougher to jump back in. So I'm still running and updating all my numbers and trying to stay on top of it. Just 0 cents down for the time being until I get to that 50 number. Yeah.
Now, college football, I don't know how much of this story you want me to tell, but when I think we went to a Laker game, we hung out there, then went for a bite. And, you know, you were explaining your college football betting to me, and it sounded very exciting. And I was like, hey, why don't you just text me your picks, you know, after you lay the lumber? And you were like, yeah, sure. And I was just like, oh, man. But, of course, that was when, you know, COVID hits and blah, 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 the rest is history. Why do you think you could find a bigger edge in college than NFL?
I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You know, the NFL, for one, there's fewer teams, right? So there's just the odds makers have more at their disposal as far as information. There's fewer teams to look at and to track. Also, the market's just bigger, right? The liquidity to bet into the NFL is way higher. So therefore, when there's like closing lines or lines are moving, that's more valuable info than when like college lines are moving because it's smaller limits. You also just have a lot less turnover. So, you know, coaches and quarterbacks generally stay in the NFL like in the same place for quite a long time. In college, they're constantly fluctuating, especially offensive defensive coordinators. I thought there's like nearly a decade run where the market to start every year wasn't adjusting for the fact that an offensive or defensive coordinator in college was new. And that, for example, one was playing with way more pace than the team was prior. And they would open up totals the first few weeks, like 10 points too low. Like there's just opportunities like that with so many more schools to follow and so much shakeup. There's transfers in the player portal that way. Then recruiting, how are you valuing recruits coming in from high school? Who's going to make a difference? In the NFL, like that there's some rookies that make a difference, right? There's a few adjustments here and there, and trades happen occasionally, but not even like the NBA or anything in that regard. And a couple players outside of like quarterback position just don't make a big difference to an NFL team as a whole via a point spread perspective. So it's just a tougher market to beat. College still a lot easier. So I recommend people that are just maybe getting started or looking at it, they're doing it for fun but want to take it more seriously, focus on college and even focus on one conference. Maybe it's the MAC or the Conference USA or the Sun Belt, a smaller conference that has smaller schools, maybe not as many players out there that are looking at those games, and maybe there's more opportunity in those ones too.
So I know you're not betting, but is there anything that like you have advised friends on, week one, season totals, Heisman? I was just in Vegas and I took two guys to win the Heisman. I think it was a Clemson quarterback.
Ukulele.
Is that how you say his name? Ukulele?
Yeah, DJ Ukulele. Something close Ugalele to that. Okay, yeah. Okay.
And then the other guy, I took the quarterback from Georgia. I just have a feeling the Clemson-Georgia game won't really matter early in the season, and it feels like both those are probably going to get to the playoff. So I'm assuming both quarterbacks will be in the mix for the Heisman.
So I don't mind the Georgia play. And that's one I had recommended a couple months ago when I started looking at futures, is Georgia 8-1 or better to win it all. And a lot of the reasoning, now they have a few receivers, a tight end that's been missing practice, yep, but the projection is that they're going to be good to go and start for the Clemson game. But the idea is this, like you mentioned, the Clemson game doesn't really matter. And you're right, unless they win. If they win, the plus 800 is going to cut in half and you'll never get a better price. The Heisman shot on the quarterback, that price is going to cut in half if they beat Clemson. If they lose, they're still in the SEC. The price isn't going to really change much. And if they run the table in the SEC or get to the SEC title game, then they're going to be in the playoff anyway, or they're going to be in Heisman contention anyway. Yeah. So it's now or never, I think, to bet on Georgia. And the fact that defense with Kirby Smart is always top tier, right? But they got the quarterback transfer from USC. He was a high recruit. He gets hurt. He doesn't play most of last season, JT Daniels. Yeah. And when they did finally bring him in and said, all right, his knee's ready to go, those last four games, like Georgia's offense went to another tier that just hasn't before. So I think their ceiling's higher this year with the floor of a great defense and at least a good run game that keeps them in the mix to being like a top five team. But if JT Daniels takes them to that other level, then at the price 8-1, and again, the JT Daniels Heisman bet I think is totally fine.
We had on RJ Young. He joined Fox about a year ago, and he really talked about the Alabama changes. I think they have five new coaches, assistants, coordinators, and they lost 15 million guys to the NFL. And there's a lot of turnover, but it's Alabama. I don't know. Where are you on the tide?
I think, was it seven players in the top 37 picks or something like that? It's insane. Yeah. Like, that just never happened. So there's definitely going to be some sort of drop off. Now everyone's saying that Bryce Young is like, the real deal. He's going to just come right in. My vision for how this plays out is twofold. I think the where we can take advantage the most is in week one against Miami. I think the under was 64. It's down to 62. I still think it's too high. Oh, so wow. I think that's the play. I think you're going to see more of an old school Alabama type approach from Nick Saban, where they're relying on a defense that I think, because I think those seven players in the first 37 were all offensive players.
Offensive line, skill position.
So the offense, and you have a brand new quarterback who hasn't played at the collegiate level yet. I think they're going to go back to more like, let's focus on the run game. Their defense is going to be elite. It's actually going to be better than it was last year. They can rely on that. So I think they're going to play a slower game after having like this historically great offense. And then on the Miami side, I know everyone's saying Derek King's fine. He's recovering from the injury. He's good to go. They graded out really well offensively last year, but I still think that's like a pretty big question mark. It's uncertainty there, and it's week one, and he hasn't played for a while, and it's Alabama's defense. So when it's all said and done, I think the angle on Alabama, it's not necessarily, look, they're still the top rated team in my projections entering the year, and then it drops to like Oklahoma and Clemson are 2-3, and then I think Georgia's 4. So just to kind of let people know in some context, but Alabama's still number one, but their offense is going to be significantly less efficient. Their defense
is slower. What do you make of the OC change at Bama? Bill O'Brien?
I'm intrigued. I'm not sure I actually have an answer for you on that, which okay. I think is okay, and which is maybe part of the reason that I prefer under, too. I mean, Sarkisian, and I don't know if you want to talk Texas football at all a little bit, but
Have
you noticed how – so Steve Sarkisian, one of like the greatest offensive minds we've ever seen, even at the NFL level, right, with the Falcons. And prior to that, and he had like the mishap at USC, and I think shout out to him for like getting over things. And,
yeah.
A really good place. He gets a shot here at Texas. The last 3 years, right? Years 2 through 4 of Tom Herman at Texas. What did we hear every year? It's Tom Herman was great at Houston, right? So it's like, all right, this is the, they always have top 10 recruiting grades. So, all right, this is the year. So year two, like everyone's hyping them up. They're a public team anyway, right? It's the University of Texas. So what do we do like the last 3 years? We bet under on Texas season wins because every year they're just way overhyped. Tom Herman, whatever. Now it's Steve Sarkisian coming in. Every magazine media pundit talking Texas this year is saying it's a rebuilding year. It's going to be 2 or 3 years, and then we'll see where Sarkisian's at. So what do we do now? Jason, you know how it works. Like everyone's discounting
Texas. The over.
No one's talking about it. They're over 7.5. I think they're at least an 8-win team often enough that that's worthwhile. So Texas, I actually think, is being overlooked, and part of the reason being Steve Sarkisian, who will no longer beat Alabama. So another reason I think Alabama's offense drops off a little bit too.
Any Heisman sleepers out there? With everybody loves this Ole Miss quarterback.
Yeah, that's the only one. I messaged a guy that one of my betting partners a few months ago, and he grabbed like 50-1, and I think 30-1 or better is still worthwhile, which exists in the market. Like people can go find it. But here's what it is: Lane Kiffin, year two, like with a real off season to prep, is going to be phenomenal when you look at Matt Corral's numbers last year. So it is what it is. The bet really is: can Ole Miss win 10 games? Can they have like a nationally televised big win that gives him the credit and starts that real buzz? Look, last year they went toe to toe with Alabama anyway.
They did.
It was like both teams scored in the 40s. It basically came down to who had the ball last. They end up losing by, I think, a touchdown. So can they do that again this time on a big stage? And then if they can get to 10 wins, like on average, they're probably like a 7.5 to 8 win team. But can they exceed that and get to 9 or 10 wins with his stats being just off the charts, like kind of Lamar Jackson-esque from a few years ago, where the Louisville, I think they only won 9 games that year, but his stats were just so much better than everyone else. I think that's in the mix. So at 30-1, again, you only need it to hit, you know, 1 out of 31 times for it to be a break-even proposition. I think it's worthwhile still at that price.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, let's pivot from college football real quick. You had mentioned the NFT space and comic punks, punk comics. I'm sorry. I don't understand all this stuff. I'm not smart enough. You know, I'm trying to be smart, Preston, but I don't get it. I've been looking at your feed. I watched a couple of your videos. This is, listen, man, you were, people need to realize, you were on TV talking about sports gambling a year ago. You are now in the NFT comic space. Like, how does this happen? How do you make that jump that quickly? Or were you a big comics guy like growing up?
It's less the comics itself, although we hired an actual like DC Marvel illustrator from Australia to do our comic. It's less that. It's more just the utility and practicality of what the NFT like collectible space can be. And so the jump, it kind of caught me by surprise too. We didn't really start talking about it, me and my two partners that like co-created it with me, till March. And then it was out in May. So it was like a whirlwind of 2 months. That's when I stopped losing weight. I was down like 21 pounds. And I told you there went 2 or 3 months where I just plateaued. Actually, I think I gained like 3 pounds or 2 pounds from there. So that's when that happened. And then the last 6 weeks, I've tried to get back at it. But it was crazy. And I had been, and you know, like I was into Bitcoin and crypto stuff early on.
Yes.
And so it's kind of all tied to just the blockchain technology and what you can do there. But it's definitely, like you said, my feed's more catered towards that. And it's been interesting trying to juggle's maybe the wrong word, but initially I didn't want to like, you know, scare all my sports followers off. Like, what is this crap? Or like over like Punk's comic thing. Like this guy's telling me to buy. So I was like really light on, I never told anyone like, hey, you should invest in this NFT project. It's like these crypto punks. We had a DC Marvel guy take them, mold these stories around them. And we have this comic and there's big art behind it. And the 16 CryptoPunks themselves, which have been flying, anyone that's following that space, I think the floor to just buy one now is like $250,000. The 16 of them, when you buy the comic, you get proportional ownership of those 16 punks. So it's kind of like a community project in that sense.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Did you create the 16 punks?
I owned 3 of them. And with my other 2 partners, we put the 16 kind of together. And that's what we built the story.
So other people own the other 16 and you guys just bought them out?
So between the 3 of us, we owned all 16. And so we basically put them up. And when you buy and invest in the comic, you're investing like at a proportional fraction of the 16 punks as a whole.
Okay, so just to go back, when did you get involved in buying the 3? This was in March or way back before
that? I'd started diving into Top Shot like in December, which is
that's right. Yes, start. Top Shot. Yes, we did swap a lot of texts about Top Shot.
And so yes, by the
you
end,
you almost bought one of mine. Oh, your friend almost bought one of mine.
Oh, really?
Remember?
I forgot about
it. It was the guard on the Kings who you love, Halliburton.
Oh, Halliburton, yeah. I actually gave Tyrese Halliburton his first moment. He tweeted about it and we were DMing and he owes me an autograph still. So I got to reach out. But I gave him his first moment. And it's actually been rebounding the last couple of weeks as everything else has exploded.
Top Shot? Okay.
Yeah, it has. So, but that was kind of the entry point for me through January. Then I started diving into a bunch of other stuff. I bought some punks in February probably. And then in March, we kind of started this concept and this idea. But ultimately, like what I was getting at is I was afraid to tell people like, hey, invest in this project. I think it's going to be worthwhile. To get one, it was 0.2 Ethereum at the time, just like $700. So it's still like a pretty hefty investment for people.
0.2, and this was when, March?
In May, when we actually dropped it and launched
0.2 for one. All right.
And so for a lot of people, like $700, it's a lot, but it's a lot cheaper price point than buying a whole CryptoPunk, right? I mean, at the time that you'd need $50,000 or something. Now, like just one purchase of the punk, it's like a 65X in the last few months. Like the 10,000 punks comics are worth $400 million in the market as of like last night.
Oh, what?
So getting to my point, I didn't want to be the guy shilling this random NFT thing when most people just don't even want to like care. And I regret not shilling it harder now because it's like turned into like a pretty big thing, like a ton of VC interest and partnerships with some really big companies and corporations potentially going forward. And it's just like, it's been obviously a great investment on my side,
but
I wish I had actually kind of gone a little harder on the shills back in.
Okay. So you and 2 buddies own 16 of the crypto books.
Well, now
right?
Everybody owns them. Basically, if you have a comic, you own it, or if you have 100 comics, you own a bigger part of them. But now everyone basically as a community owns these 16 that we're building these comics and stories and like IP, intellectual property, and branding behind.
Okay. Yeah. And I'll ask the dumb question for everyone who's listening. how do you go up 65X on CryptoPunk comics in 4 months?
It's just a matter of, it's like market dynamics, right? Like people want them, then they buy them. It was weird. Like it took almost 4 weeks to sell out the 10,000. A lot of these NFT projects the last few months, they sell out in like 20 minutes. And they're doing a similar like 9 to 10,000 numbered whatever. Ours took almost 4 weeks to sell out. And for a while, you could still buy them for like 0.25 or 0.3 in the secondary market. And then we just started adding a lot of like, for example, when you have a proportion of the 16 CryptoPunks, you have them via Punks tokens that represent your actual ownership. Mm-hmm. And we're like doing merch dividends from merch that we do down the road. Those profits get funneled into Punks tokens holders. So now you're almost like you're investing in the company and the IP and the branding itself. So that spiked something. And then we announced like these meta heroes that are going to be actually launching later this week, where there's these superhero characters that we're going to kind of bring into the Punks comic. Like back in the day with DC and Marvel, mm-hmm. when they started doing comics, they didn't actually have superheroes at first. Then they started introducing like Batman, and it was like this novel concept, or Superman. Mm. And so it's similar to that, where we've brought in some of these meta hero characters. So it's this project that's still like gearing up, but people kind of see the future of what it could be, right? Like the marvel of this virtual NFT metaverse mm-hmm. world.
And so, you know, where do you think the end game is? Would you guys end up trying to sell and walk away, or do you just build this like Marvel Comics and just hold on to it and build this juggernaut?
I think since it's so, I mean, the whole space is surrounded around decentralization, right? Making it a community thing where everyone can be a part of it. I think the end goal is that where everyone feels like they're involved. They have even if it's a small fraction of whatever the value is of this, everyone kind of has their say to some extent. And so like selling out to a VC, I know, like, especially our main business dev guy, his name's Sean, they've talked to VCs plenty and been, you know, the way that you can get in right now is to buy comics like everyone else. And that's also probably why the floor has been raising pretty significantly, is I think you've had like hobby collectors, NFT, you know, people, analysts, whatever, but you've also, I think, had some more mainstream, higher end. Like, for example, there was a big fund that came in and bought 100 CryptoPunks and a bunch of these like generative art projects it was about 3 weeks ago. And like stuff just kind of been running since. But I think you've had some kind of like real players on the corporate or VC level that are starting to invest in the NFT space. And so I guess to answer your question, then, how did it really rise that quickly? We've added value. We have a great community, a great team. And then I think it's just a lot of the investors that are entering the space are pushing it there.
It sounds a little speculative. So is it mostly people who are speculative jumping in hoping to make money, or people who are actually fans? And like, what kind of people are these? Are they like sports fans, or just like dads or young kids, teenagers?
It's a mix of everything. I think there's a lot of people that came from like the NBA Top Shot community, which kind of bridged that gap of mainstream to NFT space just for a lot. Then there's a lot of just from crypto from the last few years that have kind of come over to the NFT space. And then, yeah, you'll have random dads that are just like doing this on the side. They have real jobs too. Like, it's definitely just like any other community would be, or fan base, right? So it is definitely speculative. And at this point, for the price, it's just to get one comic. Now is like over $20,000 when before it was, you know, like 700. I wouldn't tell anyone to go buy it now unless, like, you know, you're bankrolled enough that it doesn't really affect you either way.
I mean, wow.
So
I mean, I'm just trying to think, like, this is, it seems like, and again, maybe I'm generalizing, but a lot of the young folks are into Top Shot, are into the speculative NFT stuff. A lot of the younger people I even play pickup basketball with, like, they don't really have jobs like you and I, well, not you anymore, like me, where it's like they're doing a lot of this, like, I don't want to say it's day trading, but the speculative online stuff.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of it might be hitting, or are we just not hearing about the misses?
I think a lot of it is hitting. There's a lot of stuff in gaming, and it's something I've kind of dipped my toes in, but I couldn't speak very knowledgeably on. But there's one game in particular. So again, it's like decentralizing gaming, where players of the game can actually earn the game currency and then trade it for like Ethereum or Bitcoin, and then eventually dollars if they want. So there's this new game called Axie. And again, kids everywhere internationally are playing this. It's blown up.
It's A-X-I-E?
Yeah, Axie Infinity.
Okay.
And it's essentially like, say it's like playing like a World of Warcraft game or something like that, except it's all on the blockchain. And as you play, you earn this currency and you basically get paid to play, and you play with NFT characters. And so it's like this whole, like, all, like you said, the younger generation is so like forward thinking, virtual metaverse, like that's where they see things. And it's, I think, harder for that 30 and older age group to really grasp it. But the under 30, like you're saying, like these kids don't really have jobs. They talk about trading Wall Street bets and crypto and NFTs, and they play games like all day. It's like, how do you do that? There's ways to actually like make money from it. And so, yeah, I think it's actually viable. We just don't want to say that it is, but it definitely, I work on a team side project real quick. We have a team of like over 300 of these scholars or players that play this Axie game out of the Philippines. You make like $45 a day in the Philippines. Like, it's massive, right? And so
we
basically provide them with the liquidity to use the Axie NFTs, which might cost someone like $2,000 that no one could get in the Philippines to start playing. We say, hey, here you go, start playing. You keep 70% of what you earn as you play, mm-hmm. and we'll take 30%. And so it's like okay. a win-win. And so there's people like in different countries, Venezuela is another one we have some players in that are actually making pretty good money and they're younger. And it's just kind of, I think, the direction of this.
All right. So you keep saying we make money. So is this a fund that you started? Is this it's called an LLC?
A DAO. It's basically a decentralized LLC. It stands for Decentralized Autonomous Organization. It's essentially an entity or an LLC that we pulled together some funds and we're basically, we have a team manager that played Axie for the last few months and like basically trains the scholars and advises them and they play. And it's just, yeah, it just kind of recoups. I mean, it's a good way to kind of pay back their community too. Like they're like Philippines, Venezuela, Brazil is another one that's up and coming. There's some countries in Africa where like all these countries now have like a way to earn, especially at that age group where generally it's not the case. So
let's say Joe Bob comes to you and says, hey, I want in on the Axie. What can I give you? $10,000 and I get like a 0.5% or something. And then all of a sudden they're in. And then are you seeing dividend checks monthly from these guys playing Axie?
So this just started like 6 weeks ago, but and we had to close our initial raise. So we're not allowing anyone in. We capped it at 40 seats and there'll only ever be 99 seats. And it's with these people, man, like way richer than me. Like the liquidity is never an issue. It's like $10,000, like they wouldn't even
consider it. Do anything.
You also need to kind of have a value add outside of the money. Like if you have a connection to so-and-so or someone at this gaming platform, or if you're working with, you know, this company that does stuff in the esports space, because eventually we're going to do tournament series like every month and try to take Axie and these like play to earn NFT games, we'll call them, and do like an esports series around them. And so it was more like, if you're connected, you can get in. But it's pretty nice. It's weird kind of like visualizing these kids playing games
yes.
all day in other countries, but it's like, it goes so far and they're always so grateful. And so that's kind of part of it, I think, is that we're giving back to that community and they're able to then pay it forward and give back to either their friends start playing or their community there and where they live.
One question I glossed over, that's obvious. You said playing on the blockchain. This is not an Xbox game that you can play over online.
You play online. Like, yeah, it's connected. So it's the whole concept of like blockchain stuff is called Web3. Like we've lived in like the Web2 world for a while. Web3 is where, and they play on their computers, like on their desktops. But that's, yeah, I don't think you can actually like tag a Xbox controller and play, but it's very similar just from a game structure. If people want to go check it out, to kind of like Pokemon, except it's 3-on-3. And so it's like Pokemon mixed with like some sort of like World of Warcraft where you go to different parts of this land and there's different arenas and you compete, but with these three little axes. And so it's kind of like a mix of Pokemon and World of Warcraft. I think
wow,
it would be like,
dude, this is,
yeah.
You have to, I hope the people listening understand. I've never heard of this until you just mentioned it. Never read it anywhere, never heard of it. It's almost foreign to me, but I mean, I never did Pokemon or World of Warcraft, so I wouldn't really know. But It sounds like something I should maybe steer my kids into looking at. But it sounds like more of a teenage thing.
Yeah, you probably wait till they're a little bit older. You don't want them getting like totally like caught up in it. But and it's like there's a lot of meta. It's like there's like some Magic the Gathering kind of like game theory in the game itself too. So you definitely like, you know, an 8 or 10 year old. I don't remember how old your kids are, but it would be tough
exactly
for them to play.
Exactly, 8 and 10.
Okay, it wouldn't be really easy for them to like jump in and have success. All right. So it definitely is catered towards like high school and post high school ages, just for the sake of the challenge, right? And the game theory involved.
This is so even nerdy. I can't believe I'm admitting this. But so my wife had heard about this Elon Musk school called the Synthesis School. It's like online. I don't know if you've heard of it. And you have to kind of apply to get in. And my son applied and he got in. So
oh,
he starts doing this over Zoom. And it's like, you know, kind of creative thinking, problem solving stuff. And I decide I'll listen to some of the Zooms, you know, just to hear. It's like a group of kids. And one of the moderators goes, okay, does anybody know, and start saying these terminologies? And I'm like, what are they talking about? Like, I don't even know what this stuff is. And you know, my son, like, nobody really knew. And I'm like, how is he going to? And he's like crushing it and does this once or twice a week. And I don't think it's similar to totally what you're talking about. By the way, have you heard of Synthesis School, Elon Musk?
I've heard of the school. Yep, 100%.
Yeah. Is it something you would consider sending your kids to?
I never dug into it. I just knew that he had started that school up and was offering basically that opportunity to people. And I never dug into it. But my kids are younger. But it sounds
it's a
good experience. Like, well, in does your kid like to code at all? Like anything? In
we
that
have him.
Like,
have you heard of ID Tech?
Uh huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're doing the coding classes for kids.
Good.
Where you like get an instructor, and he's like, they're, you know, they play Roblox, and
Roblox is a great comp to Axie too.
Oh, really?
It is. That's actually, well, okay. I'm not as well versed in the actual gaming space myself, but that is like one of the two or three games they always bring up when they're talking about like comparison.
Interesting.
So, there you go. Yeah, you're familiar.
So
with that.
For this ID Tech, where you do like a private one-on-one, and they basically, you tell the instructor, hey, I want to make a game with this, that, and this, and they're like, all right, well, let's code it together. So my son and daughter each are making their own game, and they've recently
awesome.
Got to the point where their friends are joining them to play the game. And it's like basic stuff, but it's the beginning. And, you know, and again, me and my wife are like, listen, if they give you homework, we can't help you with this stuff. I don't understand any of this. I mean, do you code at all?
I do know a little bit. I took a boot camp years ago for 4 months straight and learned some basics. So like I could make a really crappy website right now. I'll say this. If there's one recommendation after getting your kids into some form of learning how to code or build things just in the tech space, I think that's massive. So you guys are on the right track.
Yeah.
The whole Web3, like building NFT stuff, it's a particular language within the coding called Solidity. And right now, like if you're trying to do an NFT project, you cannot find a Solidity developer that's available. They're just all taken. Now you can learn, if you're pretty well versed in code anyways, in development, you can learn Solidity and you can learn how to build these smart contracts that, you know, basically integrate onto the blockchain and actually function. But I would suggest anyone that has kids that do code or have some sort of tech background, they're in high school, maybe they're in college. If you learn how to code Solidity and build smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain in the next year or two, you're going to be 100% set for life. Like without a doubt in my mind. I think that's like the war.
And again, it's tough for people to wrap their head around this, but this is where it's headed, right? Like we're still in what, 25 years into the internet, basically?
Yeah, it's still pretty early relative to, right? Like you think forever. We're only 25 years into the internet. Yeah, it's just going to keep getting, you know.
So I guess I'll ask this at the end.
Sure.
And this is a tough question. I don't know if you want to answer this. So based on some of the stuff you've got cooking, Preston, it sounds like you're never going to work a day job for the rest of your life. Is that a fair statement?
Huh? I
mean, you're young. You're not going to have to go to an office or answer to anybody.
I've never had to do that. That's been a blessing for sure. And I've shared this
before.
Well,
wait a minute. What ESPN? You have to go into the office.
Oh, I definitely don't count that. Like as a 30-year-old, I got to do ESPN and do TV for 2 years. It was like exhausting and tiring sometimes writing articles, but I never took that as like working a day job or going into, and most of it, I never went into an office. It was just like a studio for, you know, 2 hours to shoot the show.
Yeah. But it's, I guess what I'm trying to ask is like, it sounds like some of this stuff's really taken off for you, dude.
Yes, I've been blessed. And I will say this, when I said I've never had the day job, I got to give a lot of credit, which I have a few times, but to my wife, while I was finishing my master's degree, while I started betting, most people that age, cause I got married pretty early. Most people that age, they're their sole income. You start betting if you have a bad run or something. Like you have to work a while and like make some money back and then you try again and try to bet. Right. So I was fortunate enough where I could take more risks early because she always had a job too and was able to bring income in. So having that like dual income went a long way. So I don't try to like credit myself entirely. I have to give her a shout out, even though she'll never actually listen to this,
but you don't think she listens to sports podcasts? Come on.
She probably listens to some stuff on like my Twitter feed. So maybe when I retweet this out later in the week, maybe there's a chance. But she definitely gave me that opportunity when I had some money from poker way early on. I finished school. It's like, I can put this all towards betting and see where this goes, as opposed to, hey, we need this money to pay for food and rent and whatever else. I had a second person there helping me and she did well
in
her space. So that went a long way. So always, again, stay within your means, whatever it may be. But that definitely helped where I didn't have to, after college, start taking regular jobs.
My wife, before we were married, she basically had a job making good money. And I was like, I think I should quit to do this website. And then I kind of got lucky with it. I wasn't making any money and then the website sold. But
you guys were married before you started the website then?
No.
Oh, okay.
I started the website in like 2006. We got married in 2007. It was close.
Oh, but
we
knew
were
each
living
other.
Together.
Okay.
Yeah. We were living together. Yeah, it was obvious.
Hold on, let me interject. You don't know if you would have quit and done the website then if she wasn't working too and you guys weren't together. potentially.
It made it way easier. Yeah. Yeah. She was making over, you know, she was a pharmaceutical sales rep at the devices.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And like, you know, she's doing great. And I could just be at home doing the blog. I quit my job at Us Weekly. Yeah, it worked out great. That's massive. Obviously the wives are huge. But just to go back one last thing, because I wrote down some notes, because this Axie on blockchain is so fascinating. It almost says, like, you know, I made that investment in the soccer team in Mexico. I think I had maybe mentioned it to you. I don't know.
Some Australian basketball team too, potentially.
Say almost the same group. Cool. But it's like you said, you can't just come in and say, hey, here's $500,000. I want an Axie. Like, what else do you bring to the table? The soccer group, like, they got a diverse group. Like, you know, they bring in Eva Longoria, because guess what? The soccer team is in Mexico, and Eva Longoria is tracking massive in Mexico. You know, I'm sure there's some similarities for Axie.
Now you have, if I mentioned all of this, pitching a potential addition to the group, to the DAO, that would probably work and work wonders. And if you were able to get to a number like $500,000, like, for sure. So we've actually had like contacts with some people in Venezuela, one of the members of the DAO, and we have some of these players that are in Venezuela. We're trying to get to, we just had a meeting with Loud GG. It's the biggest esports team out of Brazil yesterday. I don't know if you remember, I actually speak Portuguese, so we were able to.
That's right. Yeah. You should tell people you're Mormon and did your mission and all that.
I served a mission in Portugal. So I lived in Portugal for a few years. I can still speak Portuguese pretty well. So that was a blessing, but we haven't actually had a connection to Mexico yet. So if there's something there, which there is, now that I'm thinking it through a little bit live on the spot, we can definitely talk about it further.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you throw
it's
out
funny
names like that, like, it's pretty easy to convince the guys.
MLS All-Star Game is this week, and our team has a box out here in LA. So, like, I'm going to go meet all the rest of the investors. So, they brought in Ozil from Turkey. Obviously, he is one of the owners. I don't know if he's here for the game, But like, that group is super smart and they know what they're doing building. It sounds like your Axie group. By the way, are you running the board? Can I ask that? No,
I'm like really low on the totem pole of 40. Like, no joke.
Is this a Jeff Ma thing or no?
No, he's not included at all, to be completely honest. That's again, another person that I know could have invested in the Punks comic early. I should have shielded it harder. And I feel bad I didn't, because he had, you know, extra money. He could have just taken a shot on it. But yeah, he hasn't really dove in. He does crypto stuff, but nothing crazy. Yeah,
basically, Preston Johnson is crushing it. You need to get in his world and his space. And this might be one of the most random but informative pods we've taped in a while. I love this stuff. Yeah, I mean, you're bringing new stuff to the table. People are getting smarter. Do you want to pop up anything here on to close out the pod? Do you want to mention where people can check out your comics?
You can check out the comics. I don't need to pub the comic, honestly. Like, people can see it on my Twitter feed at Sports Cheetah. But every day at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific, I do a daily sports show where we take calls and talk through their bets.
That's right.
And basically, we track them throughout the month, and we give away cash at the end of the month to the callers that have the best records.
I'm going to be calling in before week one in the NFL, and,
he's
going to hate my picks. Definitely.
Possibly we'll hate them. And then we're also doing a betting extraordinaire show that launches next week, which sounds just like Who Wants to Be a Betting Extraordinaire? It sounds like what it is, where we do these. And again, people call in. There's 7 days or 7 tiers of cash we give away if you make correct picks. That launches on Monday next week. But you can kind of just find it all from my Twitter handle. I'll pub it out there, or the Betts TV YouTube page.
I'm just curious, have you hired an assistant yet?
No, but for the first time ever, I had to get an accountant this year. I've always done it myself, man. And
that's,
I finally
crazy,
just caved. And I was like, I got to pay someone a few thousand bucks.
All right, dude. Well, congrats on all your success, man. We'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it, Jason. Take it easy.